This is a CBC podcast.
CBC podcasts are supported by HP Print Studio. Express your brand with HP Print Studio. Find free customized templates to build your business identity, like letterhead, business cards, and shipping labels. Start the journey at www.hp.ca/print.
Hello, and welcome to the Vinyl Cafe podcast. We publish a new podcast every weekend. You can download the latest or subscribe to the Vinyl Cafe podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting. This week, Stuart has advice for young writers.
School's out, or if it isn't, all discipline is unraveling, and it will be out any moment. The school year is winding down like it always does, with a whimper. Oh, there have been the odd exams, but mostly it's been sports days and field trips and class pictures and picnics and scavenger hunts and three-legged races. Everyone is sick to the teeth of school. Teachers are sitting at their desks with their cell phones cradled in their laps, sending secret text messages to each other during silent reading. "I'm not sure I'm going to make it," they write. Well, I'm not sure what the calendar says, but I'm prepared to shoot the gun and declare that summer is here. No more homework, no more books, no more teachers' dirty looks. It's summer, folks. And today on the show, in honor of summer, we're going to feature a handful of stories written by young people. We've noticed that more and more young people are listening to the Vinyl Cafe. Teachers are using the Vinyl Cafe stories in the classroom. Did I say that? I am so sorry. I wasn't going to mention school again. I meant to say, more and more young people are coming to our live concerts with families and friends, and we wanted to acknowledge that. Today on the show, letters from young people. We've been collecting them all year, especially for this School's Out edition. You might remember we asked young people to write us. Well, they've been writing. We've got letters from all across the country, and we've read everything that's come in. Just like the story exchange, we said these stories had to be true and should be short. Well, we're going to read some of them on today's show, and I'm going to talk about writing, about what I like about it and what I find difficult. Well, time to get to our first letter. A number of teachers wrote to us and sent us stories their students had written. Linda Collier, who teaches grade 10 and 11 students at McLean Memorial, two words that I really don't like to hear together, but what can you do? McLean Memorial is in Chibougamau, Quebec. And Linda sent us a package of letters from her classroom. Linda teaches English to students whose first language is French or Cree. One of those students is Erwin Bosom. This is Erwin's story. It's about his village's goose hunt. "Dear Stuart," writes Erwin, "it was spring 2000, our Cree goose break. I was 9 years old. Our people had to travel to the camp for 8 hours. We were getting closer and closer when we saw geese above us flying over the trees toward the lake. As we were walking, all we could hear was pow, 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 gunshots, and the sound of geese in the distance. We were there. The next day I woke up early. The sky was bright orange, the sun about to come up. My grandma was making her famous porridge. After we ate, we went out on the land. It was beautiful. The wind was coming from the south. That's when the geese really start to fly. As we were walking to the blind, we heard geese from a distance. And we could hear my grandpa yelling from the blind, 'They're landing!' So we ran. As I was running, my foot went through the snow. I was stuck. I called out for my cousin Ernie, but he ignored me. He kept running to the blind. The geese were landing, and there was nothing I could do. I was stuck in the snow. My grandpa whispered at me from the blind to curl into a ball to keep warm, and I did. I waited, and my foot was getting cold. And then all I could hear were gunshots. I got out my gun, too. I had a .410 single shot. I put in a shell. As soon as my gun was loaded, three geese flew over me. I aimed at the one in the middle. I closed my eyes and pulled the trigger, and boom! Two of them were going down. My grandfather yelled, 'Erwin killed two geese in one shot!' Everyone came down and watched me as I grabbed the geese by their throats and dragged them to camp. That night, we had a feast in honor of my first kill. My grandfather had been there when my older brother killed his first goose. That means a lot to us. I am so glad he could be there for my first geese, too. My grandfather has since died. I miss him a lot. That story came to us from Erwin Bosom of Chibougamau, Quebec. I'm Stuart McLean, and this is The Vinyl Cafe, and if you just tuned in, we're reading letters from young people today. Our next one is from Kayla Vilches of Victoria, B.C. Kayla wrote this story about her father. Dear Stuart, my dad's been a tree planter all his life. He's never done anything else, and that's fine with him. The outdoors is where he was born to be. From March until October, it's just him and the mountains. In the winter, however, when the ground is too hard to dig and the terrain too snowy, my dad is forced to settle down. Lucky me. Most weekends in the winter, I usually find myself making the almost silent hour-long drive up island with my dad to a cabin that he likes to rent on Shawnigan Lake. Once we get to the cabin, we start a fire, make a pot of spaghetti, and sprawl out on the L-shaped couch and watch the hockey game on the old fuzzy TV. During commercials, my dad picks up his old guitar and plays Mr. Bojangles, Time of Your Life, or some other song that he's taught himself that summer. When I was little, I used to find this distracting, but I've come to notice almost enviously how talented he is, how easy he makes these intricate pieces seem. One weekend last February, when I was going through a particularly bad Rolling Stones obsession, I said during one commercial break, "Dad, do you know As Tears Go By?" He responded by pulling out an old tattered music book and opened it to a page that he had highlighted years ago. He showed me which frets to put my fingers on and waited patiently until I got all the chords right. G, C, A, 7, D, C-E-D. After practicing quietly while my dad watched the end of the game, I took a look at the words and started singing softly along with my strumming. My dad, the game now over, turned his attention to me and said, "You're doing really well. I never knew you were so good at singing." I blushed slightly and continued singing, louder and stronger than I had been before. He joined in. A compliment like that meant so much to me. My dad is so confident and independent, and he has so much talent, it's sometimes intimidating. So to be able to do something that impressed him, especially something that he knows a lot about, well, to me, that was a big accomplishment. The last time I visited my dad, in the Vancouver Cancer Lodge, where he now lives, he picked up his guitar and tried to play like he had last winter. But the same drugs that have made his face swell and his body shrink have also made his hand shaky and unsure of the notes. Not long after he picked it up, he sighed sadly and put it back on its stand in the corner of the room, muttering about the drugs in his shaking hands. Later, I walked to the corner of the room, picked up the guitar, and slowly tried out the chords that he had taught me not a year earlier. As my steady hands strummed the chords, G, C, A, 7, D, C, E, D, my dad watched me enviously. That story came to us from Kayla Vilches of Victoria, B.C. Well, today on the Vinyl Cafe, we're reading stories written by young people, presumably some of them anyway, by young people who are wondering if they might like to be writers. I think the question that writers most often get from people who are not writers but think they'd like to be is, where do you get your ideas? Which I don't mind telling you can be a frustrating question after a while. Mostly, I think, because lurking behind it is the notion that getting ideas is the hardest part of writing. Getting ideas is not the hardest part of writing. Ideas, it turns out, are a dime a dozen. The hardest part of writing... Well, there are a lot of hard parts of writing, but without trying to be a smart aleck, I think the hardest part of writing is the writing. That is, the doing of it. I think the biggest difference between me and you, if you're someone who isn't a writer and would like to be, is a question of belief. I believe that I'm a writer and you don't, and that means I'm ready to do all the things you have to do to come up with something that someone will publish. And mostly, that means keeping at it. You should know that my first drafts are probably not much better than your first drafts, and my ideas certainly no better than your ideas. The difference is, I don't expect my first drafts to be any good. In fact, mostly I expect them to be lame. What I do expect is that if I keep at it and write draft 2 and 3, and then show draft 4 to my editor, Meg, and incorporate her suggestions into draft 5, that maybe by draft 6 or 7, when Vinyl Cafe producer Jess Milton starts fiddling with it, that we might just come up with something, well, that'll be good enough. The idea we started with is not nearly as important as the fact that we started, and most importantly, kept going. The most important thing, then, if you want to be a writer, is to find something to get you going. What usually works for me is a deadline. You want to be a writer? Get yourself a deadline. Sign up for a writer's class. Join a writer's group. Look into the Young Writers group online. Volunteer for a local paper. Do whatever you have to do so that someone somewhere is expecting you to hand them something. That'll get you going. Once you're going, make it as good as you can make it. And then show it to someone. And listen to what they have to say. And then go at it again. If that sounds like fun to you, then maybe you are a writer. If it sounds like lunacy, if it sounds like torture, well, you're probably right too. I'm Stuart McLean, and you're listening to The Vinyl Cafe, and on today's show, we're talking about writing, and we're reading some things written by young people. I have a letter here written by Jesse Dulster of Tillsonburg, Ontario. "Dear Stuart," writes Jesse, "in the spring of 2003, I was proud to go on my first cruise. I went with my aunt. It was to be a short 3-day cruise. I thought of it as an intro to cruising. Anyway, we boarded a nice, clean ship and anticipated sailing. When we walked to our stateroom, we were surprised to find that our beds had been pushed together. No big deal, an honest mistake, and easily solved. We asked them to split the beds. After our first few hours of sailing, it was dinner time. Dinners on cruises are fun, because you never know who you might be sitting with. We looked for our assigned table. When we got there, we were the first ones. A few minutes later, we welcomed a young couple from the United States. They were on their honeymoon. We congratulated them and ordered our food. It was a pretty silent meal, since newlyweds and tweens don't have much in common. There were, however, still 2 empty seats. About halfway through the meal, another couple sat down. They, too, had been married the previous day, and once again we didn't have too much in common. So after dinner, my aunt and I decided we'd go to the front desk and have our table changed. As we walked to the front desk, it seemed to us that everyone on board was a young, affectionate couple. And that's when we realized it. The beds put together, sitting at the table with newlyweds. The cruise company thought I was married to my aunt. I may have only been 12 at the time. As far as they were concerned, I was on my honeymoon. My aunt and I can laugh at it now, but when we first found out, it sure wasn't funny." That story came to us from Jesse Dulster of Tillsonburg, Ontario. Our last story today comes to us from Stephen Cuthbertson of Kingston, Ontario. Stephen wrote this story about his mother as a class assignment. The assignment was to write about someone who had impacted your life. Stephen's mother died 2 years ago from a rare form of brain cancer. He writes, "When my mom died, I didn't know what I was going to do. I felt like I hadn't done something important that I should have done before she died, but I couldn't remember what it was. I couldn't stop thinking about her and about what it was like when she was still here. When I was very young and she went to work, she would say, 'See you later, alligator,' and I'd say, 'In a while, crocodile.' I thought about that, and about when she would bring me to her work. She worked at a school. I would sit in her office at her computer playing these really old learning games, and sometimes she'd even let me sit in her class. Sometimes I could even answer some of the questions that her students couldn't. I'd play soccer baseball in her phys ed class, and once I scored 3 runs and my team won. After work, we'd go to Tim Hortons and get a donut and milk. For a while, I was sure that's what I'd forgotten, the part about me going to her school. But that wasn't it. Maybe it was the walks we took around the city, or maybe even the drives, like when she took me out to Wolf Island Bakery and would sit outside watching the ferry come in and out while we ate cinnamon buns. I still try to think about what I missed, about what I was supposed to do, and I still can't figure it out. When I'm at school, and when I'm in the gym playing volleyball, and when I'm in English class, I think about how my mom taught me how to read and write and play sports, and of course my ABCs. I think about how much she taught me before I went to school. Even now, the gap hasn't been filled. I'm still searching. Maybe I just didn't know how to get over the fact that my mama died. And that means no more walks through the park or trips to Tim Hortons. I will remember those days until I die, just the way I hope my children will remember me. That story came to us from Stephen Cuthbertson of Kingston, Ontario. We've been talking today on the show about young writers. People are always asking me what I was like when I was young, what I was like as a student. Well, I certainly wasn't a writer. In fact, if you want to know the truth, I was a failure as a student. In fact, I was pretty much a failure as a boy. I was the skinny kid whose ears stuck out. I don't mind saying that now that I'm doing okay. Truth is, it's probably important for me to say it. So if you are one of the skinny, awkward, failing kids, listen up. This is how it was for me. And you parents should listen up too, especially if you have a kid you've been worrying about. I think we all do a bit too much worrying these days. Anyway, for what it's worth, I went to a school where you had to be good at athletics to be a top dog. And in the hand-eye coordination game, I was dealt mostly low cards. Don't get me wrong, I loved sports. I still do. I loved playing games, but I wasn't very good at them. I was the last boy picked for the teams, all that stuff. And then I failed academically, too. I'm not sure of the why of that. I know I'm not a particularly smart guy, but I'm smart enough that I should have been able to get through grade 11 in one go, and I didn't. Either I had some syndrome that they didn't test you for in those days, like ADD, either I had attention deficit disorder or something like it, and there's a good chance of that, or because I'd already failed at athletics, I was scared to try in academics in case I failed there, too. You know the way that goes. It's safer to fail without trying than to put yourself on the line to try your best and then fail. Anyway, after my 2 years in grade 11, I stumbled into Sir George Williams University and, incidentally, took an extra year to get through there. But while I did, while I was fumbling around, I ended up in the Applied Social Science Department in a course called Group Development, which was not unlike talk therapy, and that apparently was what I needed, to find a group I could belong to. From there, I got a job at a summer camp and, for the first time in my life, found something I was good at. I kept working at the camp even after graduation, and my confidence grew, and eventually, I had the confidence to try something I'd always wanted to try. I'd been too shy and scared at university to try out for the school paper or the radio station. But now I wasn't so scared anymore, and I managed to get myself a job at CBC in Montreal. I was hired as the researcher at Cross Country Checkup. I wasn't very good at that, but I loved it, and for the first time in my life, I threw my heart and soul into something. And I guess that's the lesson. Find your heart's desire, which of course might be easier said than done, but if you're lucky like me, and I'm a very lucky man, if you're lucky and you trust your heart and follow your heart or your instincts or your tummy, you'll be happy where you end up, even if you have no idea how or why you got there. And if you try your best, maybe you'll get good at it, and maybe even great, as long as it was your heart that led you there. There is a direct line from that summer camp where I worked while I was in university to this radio show where I am today. By going there, I ended up here, exactly where I wanted to be, because I listened to my heart. But that line is only clear looking backwards. And maybe I'm talking to parents right now more than anyone else, parents who might be thinking, like I'm sure mine once did, that their kids aren't going to amount to much. Of all the parenting virtues, great patience may be the most overlooked these days. Great patience and great love go a long way. And maybe we could all practice them a little more. They certainly worked for me.
That's Stuart McLean, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe. Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe will be heading out on tour this autumn. They'll be doing live Vinyl Cafe concerts in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, and the United States. They'll be making stops in Kelowna, Nanaimo, Duncan, Trail, Vernon, Prince George, Terrace, Kamloops, Abbotsford, Montreal, Kingston, Huntsville, North Bay, Sudbury, Chatham, Indianapolis, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, Mount Clemens, Michigan, and Seattle, Washington. You can log on to the Vinyl Cafe website for a complete list of shows. You can find the Vinyl Cafe on the web at vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.